from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, we'll talk with experts about why this fire season is more severe than in years past. And we'll discuss what role climate change might be playing in shaping fire seasons around the world. Then at 9:30, marijuana growers like Ned Fussell are reeling from devastating losses.
So this was our farm here. It's like a war zone. So, I mean, yeah, we've lost millions of dollars worth of product for sure.
The North Bay and Mendocino fires ravaged at least 31 marijuana farms, damaging many more, and right at the peak of harvest season. We'll assess the damage and the road ahead after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. After nearly 2 weeks, more than 40 deaths and 5,000 structures burned, firefighters have wrested control of most of the North Bay fires. The Tubbs Fire is 92% contained, the Nuns Fire 82% contained, and the Atlas Fire is 85% contained. And the more recent Bear Fire in the Santa Cruz Mountains is now 30% contained. It is among the worst fire seasons in California history. And joining us to talk about why the fire season has been so bad is Craig Miller, who is science editor for KQED. Craig, good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
I want to also welcome this morning Scott Stevens, professor of fire science at the College of Natural Resources at UC Berkeley. And good morning, Scott Stevens.
Good morning.
Glad to have you both with us. And let me begin with our own Craig Miller. And Craig, it looks like the nightmare is finally at least moving toward its end, thankfully, blessedly. And the weather is presumably going to help. It's starting to rain a bit. And as the weather has been predicted to rain more, it will curtail the fires more. What are we seeing in terms of the rains?
Yeah, the containment numbers you mentioned are all good good news, up in the 80 to 90% range, and even the Bear Fire, which the containment level doubled overnight. So that's considered coming down the home stretch, at least for the North Bay fires, from a firefight standpoint. But the best news, as you mentioned, is that we've got this rain coming in. Fire officials have said for a while now that some of these fires are going to continue to burn or at least smolder until we get, quote, season-ending rains. I'm not sure that what we're going to get tonight qualifies as season-ending, and by that they mean fire season. But it looks like Santa Rosa could get about a third of an inch, Napa maybe a quarter inch, and even the Santa Cruz Mountains, where the Bear Fire is burning, is going to get probably more than a tenth of an inch. And that will certainly be enough to tamp things down, at least.
And we're going to talk about why this fire season has been one for the record books and at least address the whole subject of climate change and how that figures in. But I wanted to initially talk to you a little bit about the PG&E lawsuit, which is pretty big news. Others will probably follow, but a couple up in Santa Rosa have decided PG&E is culpable for lack of maintenance.
Yes, and when you say others will follow, I think that's spot on, too. I don't think this is the last of this type of litigation we're going to see, because a lot of speculation has been brewing around how this fire has started. There's been no official pronouncement at this point, but a lot of fingers are pointing toward power lines because of the extraordinary wind event that we had that started all of this. And we can talk more about that, if you'd like, about the unique meteorology around this series of fires. But a lot of questions that people are asking, look, if we knew this was coming, which we did, why couldn't we de-energize parts of the grid that were particularly vulnerable to wires being blown into trees? And so there's going to be a lot of questions coming up around this.
Yeah, the high winds, especially the Diablo winds, played a central role in this. We also had higher temperatures and a lot of dryness. But let's talk and really address the whole subject of climate change. It's a big one in many people's minds, not only with the fires, but with hurricanes. And difficult to parse this out, I realize, but because there's so many influences, both human and natural, that play into it. But climate change does apparently, according to most experts, play into it, doesn't it?
That's right. And you can't, and I think Scott will back me up on this, you know, you can't ascribe any one individual fire or series of fires to climate change. But we do know a couple of things. We know, for one thing, that the fire season has been extended. Leroy Westerling down at UC Merced estimates that in the Sierra Nevada, for example, that the fire season is 75 days longer now than it was back in the 1970s. That's almost 3 months. And west-wide, the figure is even more. It's been extended even more. And so we do have some statistics like that. We also know that the total acreage that's burning is increasing, not necessarily year over year because that fluctuates, but decade over decade, that's also increasing. But as you say, it's difficult to parse because there are a lot of different influences on why we're getting more fire. There are certainly temperatures, rising temperatures is part of it, drought is part of it, but there are also a lot more people in harm's way, and it also has to do, as Scott can speak to at length, the way that we've been managing our forests.
Again, Craig Miller is science editor at KQED. And let me go to Scott Stevens, who's professor of fire science at the College of Natural Resources at UC Berkeley. And Scott Stevens, let's talk first about the warmer weather. It does mean drier fuels. It does mean it's easier for fires to spark or ignite. And in fact, there was an article in the Presidio National Academy of Sciences that said that essentially, you got forests in the West that are drier and more likely to burn and due to climate change.
Well, I agree with that totally. I think that the higher temperatures simply just reduce fuel moisture content. Certainly, the dead and down woody material that's not alive and also can reduce fuel moisture of live green fuels. Reduced fuel moisture simply means greater rate of spread and greater fire line intensity. So, yes, it's a factor.
And more lightning strikes in places due to climate change?
That's right, too. You know, the atmosphere just has more energy in it now with increased temperature, and we expect fully to have more lightning strikes throughout really California and even more so up in northern Canada where they're actually experiencing higher lightning already.
Scott, I don't know what you've seen on this, but I've asked the PG&E's meteorologist about this, and he actually looked for me and said he doesn't see, so far at least, a marked trend in increased lightning strikes in California. But there have been other estimates that, you know, for every degree rise in temperature, you know, there'll be like 12% more lightning strikes. But I think that depends a lot on where you are.
I think you're right. You know, up in the higher latitudes up in northern Canada, they've experienced it already with many lightning strikes, even beginning, I think, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I agree with you totally. I don't think we've seen that actually here in California yet. But we just expect it with more temperature and just more increased energy in the atmosphere.
And why are these huge fires, Oakland Hills fire and this fire, for example, occurring in October? There's been a lot of speculation on that. Scott, what do you think?
Well, you know, October, unfortunately, is one of the months that really give us pause. You know, of course, in 1991, Oakland Hills fire was October. We've had big fires in this year.
On this date, actually.
This date, amazing. So we have that period where, you know, we do have very little coastal influence. We don't get that fog and get that kind of moisture coming off the coast. And we really sometimes have very dry, warm conditions. And it's amazing to me in some ways because last winter, of course, we were in a flood. So we had a flood in the Napa River and the Russian River, and we were worried about Lake Oroville, right? And 10 months later, now we're worried about fire because of, you know, another incredible event. So it seems to be climate change also, I think, is also showing that we expect to have more variability in intensity.
And, Craig, as long as we're talking about seasons, I mean, spring's coming earlier. October may be the big fire month, but spring comes earlier, and then the snow melts too early, and water may dry up before it even gets cold.
And then you
cold.
Get, that's right, then you get more evaporation, more transpiration, and by the time October rolls around, even because this is stunning to people, what has happened here, because we had a record-setting wet winter last year, and people are asking, how can all these fires be breaking out? But it doesn't take, it's astounding, actually, how little time it takes for a lot of vegetation, a lot of different types of vegetation, especially low vegetation, to completely dry out once it stops raining.
Yeah, we also had the warmest summer in over a century. I mean, record-keeping temperatures, right?
That's right. And even though some climate models, and I think Scott will agree with this, that even some climate models predict that we will see more precipitation in California in decades to come, I've heard scientists say that there's no way we're going to get enough more precipitation to offset the increase in temperatures and evaporation.
There's also, Scott Stevens, a kind of what's been described as a climate feedback loop. You know, the more warming means more fires, which means more carbon, which actually causes, again, more warming.
No, that's very true. We put more atmosphere CO2, we can expect the warming to continue. In some ways, it's a feedback loop. One thing is a little interesting is, you know, I did a paper in 2007, tried to estimate fire area in California pre-1800 when Native Americans and lightning were the sources. Estimated a conservative estimate was 4.5 million acres burned in this state on an average year. Even with the horrendous fires that we have today in the recent past, we might approach 20% of that. And, of course, I would never advocate going back to 4.5 million acres. But this shows you just the inevitability of fire in this state. I call it the pyro state because, you know, you think about just fire in these ecosystems. They've evolved for millennia. And this is something inevitably is going to happen in this state.
We're talking about the reasons behind the fires, also talking about the role of climate change, and we're also interested in what you have to say, and let me invite you to join us. Also mentioned at the top the PG&E lawsuit against PG&E by a couple in Santa Rosa. If you want to comment on any of these things or simply bring in your own sensibility, we do want to hear from you. Any thoughts, questions, or comments you have are welcome. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, and you can join us at that number now, and in fact, it would be advisable to do so because at 9:30 we're going to shift gears and talk about how the marijuana industry has fared in the wake of these huge fires up north. Again, we invite your involvement in the program. You can join us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us simply by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And, of course, you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I want to go to your calls and emails forthwith, but let me just go back to Scott Stevens for a moment to talk about what was a cover story in this morning's San Francisco Chronicle about the fires. Talked about them as fire swirls or fire tornadoes. In fact, they were quoting Scott Upton, the State Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, who said it's no different than a hurricane. I mean, except it's fire. Talking about how they can, you know, lift cars and homes and so forth instead of doing it the way normally it's done by hurricanes. This is a phenomenon that I think probably people want to know more about. Scott, can you clue us?
Yes, you know, when you have some conditions where you just have kind of high-velocity winds and sometimes you get eddies and you get these different aspects of geography can really accelerate winds into a vortex, and you can get these fire whirlwinds or fire devils, sometimes they're called. And they do happen in fires in the most extreme conditions, and they have the ability to lift cars and actually move embers even further, burning embers for miles and miles and miles. So under extreme conditions, yes, these fire whirlwinds or fire tornadoes can actually be very dangerous and actually occur.
But they tend to occur more in generally in open spaces, like in the dust the devils of the farms and farmlands. Yeah,
it does. And you know, and a lot of these things are also fueled by the energy of the fire themselves. So it's almost like the configuration actually allows a vortex to happen, and that actually gets going. I've seen them actually in a lot of fires myself. They actually last just for a few seconds and moments. But once in a while, they can actually hold together and actually move, and they can cause great damage and really dangerous to all people.
And again, Scott Stevens is professor of fire science at the College of Natural Resources, UC Berkeley. Craig Miller, our own science editor for KQED, also with us. And again, we want to find out your thoughts and want to find out what's on your mind, and certainly many questions related to the causes behind this worst of fire seasons. Welcoming your phone calls and your emails. Also, by the way, you can post on our Facebook page, I should mention, and let me go to your calls right away here. Let me get our first caller on. It's Serena from Los Gatos. Good morning.
Good morning. My name's Karina. Thanks for having me. I just tuned in and I heard one of your guests, I'm sorry I didn't get the name, who was talking about previous forest fires in the state of California and how many millions of acres burned every year. And I think it's a really salient point that was missed. I'm sorry, I apologize if I didn't hear it, but that those fires did not burn as hot as the fires that are burning now. They often didn't get up into the canopy, and they didn't destroy the biodiversity of the understory either. So I'd like your guest who was speaking about that to speak a little bit more about that, if possible.
All right. I think that was you, Craig Miller. Go ahead.
That was Scott, actually.
Oh, it was Scott. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Scott Stevens.
No, it's a very good point. You know, a lot of areas that used to burn with high frequency every 5, 15, 20 years or so, including oak woodlands, savannas, Native Americans burned a lot of country in these areas of the fires in northern Napa and Sonoma counties. You would keep fuel loads low. And then inevitably when fires did burn, you'd have lower flame lengths and you would actually keep more of the overstory alive. Of course, there are some fuel beds in that area that burned recently, like the California Chaparral that actually is all over, say, in eastern Napa County where I actually grew up, that those things actually burn with high severity. But it's very true that a lot of areas in California, including the mixed conifer forest, if we go to the Sierra Nevada and others, oak woodlands and things of that nature, yes, they used to burn frequently enough that we wouldn't have had these type of impacts.
What about, well, let me go to some more calls here, actually, and thank the last caller. I want to go to a caller on Woodside. And Brian, welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning. I have two questions. Is there any idea of, like, how long the toxins are going to be in the air from the fires and the, you know, all the materials that were burned? And also, with these, you know, massive wildfires, you know, the amount of carbon that's released into the atmosphere, is this going to accelerate global warming?
Okay, let's go first to toxins in the air. The rain will help, Craig, but what are your thoughts prognosticating?
Yeah, the rain will help. Even the marine layer has helped some, sort of knock some of that stuff out of the air and get it settled back onto the ground. But you open up a new sort of Pandora's box if we get too much rain, because all of those toxins, and remember, think about everything you have in your house, you know, that burned, from melted electronics to, you know, household cleaning agents and everything else, that's all sitting there in those ashes. And if we get too much rain, you get runoff into the local streams and reservoirs, and you can actually end up with polluted water as a result of this.
And his question...
And I'll defer to Scott on the...
Go ahead, Scott. See if it's about accelerating climate change.
It certainly does. You know, the cycle of just putting more carbon into the atmosphere is simply going to make that feedback loop happen more. I mean, in some ways, it's an interesting dilemma, because some of our forests, say the Sierra Nevada, where we have conifer forests, we actually have too much carbon per acre now for sustainability. So in some ways, we need to reduce carbon levels to a point where we actually can have sustainable carbon, sustainable sequestration, but it might be actually a small amount of into the atmosphere to actually compensate. So, yes, you know, putting more carbon in the atmosphere is simply going to make this more difficult.
And we'll bring more callers on. Let me go next to you, Anna. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. I was curious, what's the current state of controlled burns in the state? Do they still happen? And is there any thought of introducing more controlled burns to try to reduce the severity of major fires like this?
No, thank you for that question, Anna. Scott Stevens?
There really is. You know, if you look at the director of CAL FIRE right now, Pinlot, he actually has made official policy from CAL FIRE to try to facilitate more burning in the state. And frankly, we haven't been doing enough. If we look at our record for the last 15, 20 years or so, it's been very, very low. The National Park Service doing the most, the Forest Service trying to actually do more, but actually way behind the ball. So I think in some ways, the director of CAL FIRE really trying to actually make a change here. And I support him totally. But it is something that one of the tools that we need. I also think mechanical methods, thinning, and other aspects of forest management and restoration, also oak woodlands. My view is simple. The problem is so large enough, we try to take every possible method that makes sense, and we try to go forward.
Actually, Michael, I've got a question. Excuse me a second, Craig, because I just want to dovetail that with a question from a listener named Chris, who asks, says, controlled burns can help manage brush on public lands, but what about private lands?
Well, you're right. You need to have some space. If you're actually going to burn chaparral, and we've done that actually at the Hopland Research Center up in Mendocino County. We've been doing it for almost a decade and a half. And when you burn that fuel bed, you can get flame lengths even at prescribed conditions 50 feet. And you can get rates of spread close to a meter per second. So you're not going to do that near a community. So there you're going to use things like maybe mastication. You're also going to worry about things like invasive species coming in after a treatment. So, yes, if you're near a community, you're going to really rely mostly on mechanical methods and maybe even grazing, livestock grazing, and other aspects that could be used as well.
And, Craig, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, just that the problem with managed fire, I think most scientists agree that we do need more of it to manage the fuel. The problem is that it's politically volatile. A lot of people don't like the air pollution you get when you have a controlled burn. And, of course, sometimes, you know, they get out of control. You might remember the huge fire down near Los Alamos in New Mexico several years ago that almost burned the town down. That started out as a controlled burn. They have relatively narrow windows where the weather is conducive to do these. But I think most scientists agree we need more.
Again, Craig Miller is KQED Science Center. Sorry, Scott Stevens.
One thing I just might say, right now we have something called the Empire Fire burning in Yosemite National Park. It's actually been burning for 2 months. It was a lightning strike, and the park, to its credit, has been allowing that fire to actually work ecologically, a place called the Illilouette Creek Basin. And that thing is doing nothing but good. And, you know, it's been working in an area where fire's been back since 1974. And it's certainly a wilderness. It's got no people around it. But it's actually burning today. I checked on it. And it's been burning for about 2.5 months. And we can't do that everywhere. Certainly the smoke impacts are really important. But I'm afraid if we don't start to do things creatively like this, we're always going to be behind the eight ball.
Well, here's a question coming from a listener who wants to know, what's our timeline to see increased frequency and intensity? Should we expect these annually? I suppose the basic question is, what is our current rate of change? Scott Stevens?
Yes, that's a great question. And there's so much variability, you know. And this year, we had a fire season that was somewhat moderate. And then all of a sudden, here we get in October, and we get these ignitions all in one evening, and we get all these towns threatened and terrible losses, including life. I'm afraid it's really difficult to predict. I would just say one thing, that the fuel bed, in terms of our conditions, is ripe for these things to happen. And I think in some ways we have more vulnerability around our communities we probably realize.
And I'm going to bring more listeners from our communities around the Bay into this. Joe is next. Joe, you're on. Morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So basically, in the neighborhood that I live in, a transformer has exploded like at least three times since I've lived in my house for like 2 years. And I just don't understand. It normally happens because of high winds. And I'm just wondering why, what's PG&E's problem and why they can't, you know, address these issues. Like
I can understand your concern, Joe. I mean, with the transmission. Craig, you want to weigh in here?
I wish I could. Unfortunately, I think this is part of what's going to play out over the next several months as investigators look into this. And a lot of these questions are going to come up about PG&E's management of the grid in the face of weather events that could spark fires. It could be kind of a turning point, actually, if managed correctly.
I'm looking actually at a comment from a listener named Sarah who says, I'm a regular hiker in Marin, and it seems to me that right now the amount of needles and fallen dead debris is an order of magnitude higher than in previous years. Am I right? Is this because of the multiple years of drought? Seems to be many more down trees, too. I think she's absolutely right, isn't she, Craig?
Certainly that we lost a lot of trees, even, you know, but apart from the 100 million or so in the Sierra Nevada, the Monterey pines up where I live in Novato and the parks and are dropping like flies from bark beetles. This is because of the drought. So there has been a lot of needle drop, but Scott might want to add to this.
No, you're right. You know, we see fuels turning over and basically had high growth last year because of all the rain. And Marin County is always a place that gets my curiosity, because as people live in Marin know, you're talking about a major fuel bed over there. You've got a lot of shrublands, you've got a lot of areas, Mount Tamalpais, and you've got some real active areas over there that could actually move fire.
I want to put in a plug here for Dick Spotswood's article that appeared in the Marin Independent Journal, because it was really spot on about how there needs to be drastic measures and policymakers have to really get off their duffs and do something, and citizens have to get involved too. I think he was right on target. Scott, you had something to add though? I'm sorry.
No, I think you're right. You're absolutely right. I think that, I think communities can do more. You know, we had these terrible fires come in the middle of the night. All of a sudden, there's this huge threat. And then what about maybe neighbors, and maybe a neighbor next door doesn't have a car because they're 91 years old. You have another person down the street that has a wheelchair. That conversation about your community and actually what you do during an extreme event really needs to happen. And you can think about then how to respond, because you can't do it when the fire is right on top of you. So I think there's actually some really good ideas for like California Extension, Cooperative Extension could help with this. But try to get our communities more prepared for these inevitable events.
I'm looking at a comment here, either Scott or Craig, from Brad, who says, I've heard that structure spreading occurs at the eaves. Why don't we require metal protectors to prevent this from happening? And is this even possible?
Well, the eaves are actually a really threatening point. You know, you have the vents up there. The vents are really important because we vent houses to keep fungi out of them. If we actually make a house totally airtight, you get fungus inside that destroys it. Also gives us health concerns. So, yeah, eaves could be looked at. Screening of those eaves and things of that nature, it's an important piece.
Anything else quickly, because we're coming to a break, that either you want to add in terms of prevention that comes right off the top of the mind?
Defensible space is very tough when you live in a neighborhood where there's, you know, 10 feet between houses, as the way they're building the subdivisions today. And then when fire comes in, if it's got a choice between trees and houses, it's going to go for the houses.
Thank you, Craig Miller. Thank you, Scott Stevens. When we return, we're going to talk about the marijuana industry, which was hit big in these fires. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.